Welcome to the Retail Tech Podcast. My name is Darius Wasefi. I'm the host of this show, and in our show, we focus on speaking with the builders and players in the retail space. Today, I have a very interesting topic, and it's about the topic of data. My guests are Idan Golan and Chris Casey. They are from a company called Tenoris, if I pronounce that correctly.
You got it.
Awesome, thank you. Well, welcome to the show. Please let's start with a brief intro for each one of you, and then maybe what Tenoris does.
Chris, the floor is yours.
All right. Sure. Chris Casey. I've been in the jewelry industry just over 20 years now. The bulk of that time was with Nielsen and NPD, doing a variety of things between magazines, trade shows, and the common thread throughout was some sort of interaction with data, whether at Nielsen with consumer data or NPD building a system to which kind of Tenoris has graduated to. That's kind of it. We work remotely. It's fun. Idan and I have also known each other coming up on 20 years. I have aged remarkably poorly. Idan still looks like a young, healthy man.
I have open
That's a
teeth.
different podcast interview. We'll have to ask
Yeah.
him. Yeah.
Golan, also been around for about 20 or so years in the industry. I've dealt a lot with understanding the diamond industry from the inside out, covering everything from mining to consumer behavior. I have my own consultancy. Chris and I did a lot of work in the past together. And at some point, about 4 or 5 years ago, we decided we're going to try to build a data company that will sort of a need, serve a need that we realize that doesn't exist, that exists in the industry, but nobody's really satisfying that. And that's how we came up with Tenoris. Chris literally came up with the name Tenoris, which is Latin for trend. Right? I remember correctly, right, Chris?
That's correct. Yep. You still haven't forgiven me.
Yes. And here we are, 4 years after launch. So, pardon me, 3 years after launch. So, very sort of a popular service in for bigger companies. So in that regard, we're very happy with what we're offering.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So, what does Tenoris do exactly?
Tenoris collects data from retailers, jewelry retailers in the United States, and offers that to a combination of mining companies, manufacturers, retailers, and to the financial world, to financial institutions. Basically, our data is a collection of what jewelers buy, what they sell, the details of that data. The only thing, quote, sort of speaking, that we do with the data is clean it and, kind of organize it. And once it's in a database, we give access to the data through a Power BI interface that allows our subscribers to either analyze the data online or download it and do with it whatever other analysis that is not provided through our dashboards.
Okay, great. Now when you talk about data, like price data, especially for diamonds, there's two sides to it. One is, of course, for wholesale, which is where you specialize, and then there is a consumer side. How does the Tenoris do anything on the consumer side at all, or is it just more on the wholesale B2B?
Well, our perspective in Tenoris is from the is a retailer perspective. That is, we know what retailers are buying, we know what they're selling. So in that regard, we are tracking consumer purchases And but we do not track demographics in that regard. So we know what consumers are buying, we know where their trends are changing, what are they spending, and the trends of the spending, you know, there are periods where they spend more, periods where they spend less. So that is very easy for us to track who they are, what they do, how old they are. That is the data that sort of data does not exist in retailer databases.
Okay. All right, thank you. So the next topic that I want to get into, which is really the I guess 800-pound gorilla and an elephant in the room all combined together, is of course AI. AI is changing things drastically, in some areas more faster than others, but with the new generative AI capabilities, every company is reevaluating how they use their, their tools, and how do they get their work done. And a big part of that is data. And that's why I was like really interested in like focusing on that side of the conversation, which is your business. So I want to talk about different aspects of how AI is going to change the data business. I mean, from your, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I wrote down a few things as far as like the work that you probably have to do, is acquisition of data, of course. Where do you get the data from? The cleanup and orchestration, which is what you also do. Then there are the queries, which you mentioned Power BI as an interface, and how that might change, will change. And then there is insights and pattern recognition, and then making use of that for the customers, whoever they are. So we can go through each one of these one by one, and then add additional ones if I miss anything. How does that sound?
Sure.
Okay, so Chris, I'll ask from you, maybe starting from the acquisition of data. You're an expert in doing it now and how it's been done before. What do you see as far as how things are done right now, and how in maybe 2, 3 years, or even this year, things are changing on your end?
Sure. It's kind of the lots happening, but none is happening for us. So we get data. We get data. It's just an FTP. It's just a pull from retailer's point of sale system. It comes in. It's untouched. We do it, and I want to stress that the retailers we work with, by the time we get it, they're anonymous to us. So we just have data. We know where they are, so we can do regional breakdowns, but we don't know who the retailers are. We primarily focus on independent retailers, and that's important because independent retailers, the way they enter information into their point of sale system is unique to the retailer. And we deal with just about 2,000 different retailer companies. So what we do is we get this raw feed in, and we have a parsing routine that we've written, no AI attached to it, that goes through and takes the field of text description. Which is, while these guys have point of sale systems, most retailers don't have the time to put the diamond color in the diamond color field. They put it all in one continuous text description. We take that, we parse it out, and populate the fields that we have that we need to report back to the industry. It is, we do it monthly. Nothing happens that quickly in the diamond and jewelry world. We've, again, as Idan pointed out, we've been doing it for 4 years now. It is a very traditional way to look at data. It works for us. We've looked at AI as a way to enhance that process or speed that process. Our challenge with AI to date is that the text description, again, for the 2,000 retailers, there are 2,000 different ways they call the same item. So building a library of reference becomes a very difficult thing. And our development team has taken a look at it. But at this point, the variety of inputs that come in don't make any sense for us to change the way that we're doing it now. Where it becomes interesting is on the back end, and where we continue to look at it, and Edon's been playing with it recently, is once we standardize that data, the key to us is how do we look at the data? Right now, what we've done is two things. One, Edon and I have built reports. So it's how do we look at the data? And we translate data that way, saying, here's how we know the industry looks, and you can look at it. Or again, as mentioned, we allow people to do a straight data download and they look at it however they want. All of us are constricted by our historical perspective of how the industry works. So we kind of look for an outcome and we kind of expect an outcome and we build our reports to manage to that outcome. Where AI could potentially come in is saying, hey, they look at stuff differently, right? They look at correlations that we don't think of. They look at correlations that don't mean anything to us, but they could. And that's the part that maybe this year for pieces of it, maybe next year for other pieces of it, we are looking at pretty aggressively to understand how to look at that data. So as a back-end tool, so far it doesn't really help us. We're kind of old-fashioned. As a front-end tool, it's that whole idea of how do you look at a raw data set that is now normalized and change the perspective. So again, we look at it, love to say we're doing incredibly cool things. It's not there yet. We'll get there. We're also the jewelry industry, where if you do incredibly cool things, the first thing they do is scratch your head and say, why are you doing that? You know, we already know how all of this stuff works. So it'll come, but that's kind of where we are now in the process.
Okay, so that's good. So I guess I would say, in terms of the acquisition side, no change right now, at least what you're saying. As far as the cleanup and orchestration as well, not exactly yet, until maybe there are new capabilities that you find as far as being able to do that. So then the next question and is what I call the queries. Or how the customer gets access. So right now you use Power BI, which is, you know, people that use it, they know how to use it, they know what fields and filters and everything to apply. And could that actually change to become a conversation with like something like a ChatGPT, where you just say, you know, tell me what happened on the, you know, in New England in the holiday season. How did the prices change? You know, like that kind of a conversational query. Do you see that actually changing and becoming beneficial?
Again, yes and no. Sure, it'd be great. I mean, I think everything is going to go there at some point. We have a standardized data set and you can interact with it verbally at some point. And as long as we're all learning how to phrase those questions, whether we ask it or whether we type it, it's how you present the question and that drives the result that you're getting back. So will we get there? But the thing is, as you pointed out, what's the timing for that? Because it's not just our desire to play with it, and we like to play with it. That's why we do what we do. But how do our customers use it? I forget how many different jokes you read out there saying, "Hey, it's great to see what AI can do. Can you please export it to Excel for me?" Right? So we still live in that world that says they want to get it into Excel because they have that way of looking at data. Our job is, we think, to one, create that interface, and then two, convince people that their current perceptions of how the market works are not written in stone. And in fact, by interacting with the data in a new way, we'll get different perspectives. We are back to kind of the quick idea of why we do this is there's this great disconnect in our channel, and it really exists, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It exists because jewelry is still one of the retail markets that is dominated by independent jewelers. Not dominant. Half of the business roughly goes through independent jewelers. These are the mom and pop jewelers that exist in all of our towns, wherever we might live. Sometimes one or two, sometimes quite a few jewelers out there. And they have the way they're doing business. We then have wholesalers, we then have manufacturers and suppliers that all think they have clarity into what's going on at the retailer side because they talk to some retailers every once in a while, and that one or two retailers they're really good friends with tell them what's happening. And by the time, again, it's the classic game of operator. By the time it gets back to a mining company, they don't know what the hell's going on because it's changed so many times through the. Not fair to say. They're very good research companies. It's one of the reasons they use Tenoris. But Part of it is saying that our preconceived notions of what's going on in the marketplace have been so narrowly defined by interactions with very few touch points. And we get it wrong. And this is, again, the supply side. It's I make my decisions for next Christmas in February when I'm going to manufacture, so I'm pretty far out. And if I make a mistake, I'm a year away from being able to correct that mistake. So part of it is getting to our market and getting them to understand that, hey, the quicker we can look at it and ask them questions that are not already answered in our head, that my, ego-driven reinforcement of what I already know, the better off the alignment of the industry will be. So they're actually manufacturing products that consumers want to buy. And the potential of AI is to clean up that process. We've done a step of it. It hasn't been done in the industry before. It's very well received. It's nice, but there is an evolution to that that hopefully we drive that says, let's interact with data again outside of the preconceived notions that we all carry to the industry.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. I definitely agree with that. Yes, Ida, go ahead.
I think that we, in many ways, we the role that we're playing is one that is very typical of the retail business, and that is we go where our clients are, and we will go where they want us to go. On the side of AI, and in developing our service in general, I think the important thing for service companies in this industry is to only be half a step ahead of the rest of the industry. And by half a step, I mean it will, because the process that Chris described of, takes the industry a while to slowly move forward and evolving, we don't need to wait for it to evolve, but we can't run too far ahead. And in that regard, we are moving slowly, but a little bit ahead of it. In that regard, we have two clients, right? One client is the financial firm, the other one firms, and the other one is the industry. Inside the industry, they are at the same time telling us to be very AI oriented and very not AI oriented. In that regard, that they are first very conservative, but at the same time, they say to us, all this data is nice and fine, but where's the world going? Right? Every business wants to know where things are going. And in that regard, we need to give them some sort of an answer. Ideally, we should give them some sort of an answer that will allow them to, understand where they're going and where they want to aim at. But still, the very basis of their activities is what is happening right now and trying to make sure that I'm not getting it wrong in the future. The financial world is actually kind of interesting in that on one hand, it's very advanced in the way that it's processing data, but in every DDQ that we get, every disclosure document that they ask from us, one of the first things that they ask in is that, are you using AI with your data? And if the answer is no, they're very happy. I mean, you're skipping a whole long list of questions because they want to make sure that the data that they're providing as advice to their clients is not mixed with nobody knows what, really, because in a way, AI is a black box that you know what comes in, or you believe that you know what comes in, you have no idea what's happening inside of it, and then something comes out. So in that regard, on one hand, they just want the raw data, let us do our own analysis, but please make sure that you're not giving us any process data. And that kind of puts us in a very interesting position in a, this is kind of an inflection point for, data in the world. So we need to balance these two acts and these very different sort of outcomes that they want.
That's a very good point. Thanks for adding that. And of course, a lot of what we're talking about or what we'll be doing, it depends on how, like, just a point, like a statement of I'm using AI. What does that exactly mean? Are you using ChatGPT? Are you using an LLM? Do you have your own models? Or have you trained your own data? Are you using somebody else's data? It's like there's so much detail in that, statement that, and right now, most people are more afraid and concerned about what AI might do to their business and life than actually getting more educated about the technical side of it. Now, should that be everybody's job or not? I think at least on an educational level, we need to get better at saying, like, when you say you use AI, how do you actually use it? Instead of just, I'm using AI, or are you using AI, or, like, how do you use it and understand and be educated about what each model, each path, or each workflow actually entails. But I mean, overall, I definitely agree, even from my own personal experience, about how the jewelry industry works. The speed of things is very like designed with its own cycle. I personally think that the speed is related to the speed at which humans can actually do work. The speed at which humans can actually get data, clean it, make meaning of it, and take action on it. And all of this is going to change, but it's going to take time. It's not going to change overnight. What I'm happy to see is that you're already looking into it. And I'm also, like, very interesting that you mentioned that your customers are all saying either how are things going to change with AI, and then the financials saying we want to make sure you don't use AI. So that's a very interesting piece of information for me.
Well, you very accurately pointed to a series of possible pitfalls in AI today, because saying AI, I remember, back in the 90s, everybody had their nephew build a website for them. It's like, I'm online. It's like, well, you're not really, right? And if I understand the concern that the financial firms are voicing, I don't think they're against AI. I think they're adopting AI in a very big way. But because they want to ensure the integrity of the data that they're bringing into their process, they do not want data suppliers left and onerous to bring in AI into the process of trying to make sense of the data and breaking it into its own components. So in that regard, I think that we are looking at a series of small cautious steps that I think most companies need to take in the process of trying to get into the world of AI.
Okay, that's great to hear, and I will look forward to seeing what Tenoris how you push the envelope to the point that it won't break.
People accept it.
So let's talk a little bit about the consumer side. And I know it's not like your main focus, but I'm sure you have massive information and knowledge about it. How do you think the consumer e-commerce companies, and of course, agents, is really the future of how AI is going to help us in a way that we don't even think it's AI anymore? We just have this agent for doing this and that agent for doing that, and we just tell them, get me this, and they'll go find it. That's the future. I think everybody's looking at it that way, people much smarter than myself. And so, but all of these agents need data. And the data is really the critical part of, you can get old stale data. Like, you ask ChatGPT the basic thing about something, and it says, oh yeah, my data is as far as like 2022, September 2022. I don't have anything more updated. Well, sometimes that's okay if I'm reading Shakespeare, but not for current information that I may need.
God, who's the
And
principal?
yeah. So the point is that how will the consumer side of the jewelry industry evolve with AI, and how, like one of the biggest questions in consumers' minds is price, right? Like, especially when it comes to diamonds, what's the price? How can consumers find the most updated, relevant data in price information for, let's say, diamonds?
Well, maybe I should pitch Chris for a branch of Tenoris that is not wholesaler oriented, but rather consumer oriented.
There you go.
Well, it is interesting. So again, one to just a little protection for us is, so all of the pricing that we do collect is aggregated, right? So we need a minimum number of transactions in order to report on a price, because pricing, you know, in a purely transactional basis market that says, I want to buy this, they need a price right then and there, kind of, but that's tough. So consumers now, so what do consumers do? They do anything, or, you know, I'll give an example. People call us up, or they'll call me up and say, you know, I'm looking to buy a diamond. And I say, there are a couple of public sources out there that you can get, and it's the best that's out there right now. And you go to any of the large online players that exist and start understanding, especially with diamonds, this relationship of size, cut, color, and clarity. There's value in all of those pieces that you need to understand. The hierarchy follows quality down, and price follows down with it. And then, of course, I tell them what's the reality, because we know that what people are paying out there. And, you know, do we standardize that to Edon's point and come out with something that says it's out there? You know, maybe. So there really is, certainly on the wholesale side, you know, everybody knows what rough diamonds cost. Everybody kind of knows where wholesale diamonds are trading. But it's an interesting question, because, you know, I'll be darned, because most consumers are fairly smart. And maybe those are the ones we talk to personally, so they're the smarter ones, because they're actually finding out a place to come. And so I don't know the answer to it. Does it help? Does it hurt? In an industry, you know, think about a diamond. It's, you know, it's founded on this principle that says the first interaction you're going to have with a diamond buyer, and generally, is when somebody's going out to buy an engagement ring. It's pretty late in life that it happens. And then the instances of diamond purchases after that fact are few and far between. But it's from a retail perspective, you want to make sure that if it's every 5 years or 8 years or 2 years or 15 years, you're there. So when that cycle comes around, you're there. So I think, as you were mentioning earlier, the history of that pricing becomes pretty antiquated pretty quickly. And then, is there a way to come out there? Maybe. I mean, so far we don't touch it. So far, probably people yelling at us would be a far larger sound than the cheering that we're hearing on the other side to help us out. But again, the world's going that way, and transparency is the key, and the availability of intelligent, accurate, meaningful data is coming. So that's a long way of saying,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough one.
We'll have this conversation.
Yeah.
We have an ongoing joke that, you know, I keep coming up with ideas, and Chris keeps telling me why we can't do it or can't do it right now. But the bottom line is this: many years ago, the idea of having a pricing service that no matter what is it that you want to buy, but you can put it in, and there's using, you know, geolocation, you can find out what's the best price you can get, you know, at a place near you, was sort of this holy grail of where the internet can go. And I think it's not enough. You need with it the transaction. And just being, you know, what you call the agent, right? It's just like, here's the price, you know, now go to site A or site B, or to the store in the corner of Maine and Washington, is not, you know, a very, doesn't work very well, doesn't work easily, at least. And just the marketing costs involved. But at the end of the day, I think that there is a lot of interest for those who will be, want to be very educated, that in the series, the round that they will do, what is a GIA certificate? What is a diamond? Or should we go at a, you know, at a high end place, or in a mid, you know, that sort of, you know, decision process, at the end of the day, is really, in the jewelry industry, is really about what is it that I value in terms of design, of workmanship, of taste, you know, what is what, and then that within my budget. It doesn't really start from, okay, let's find the lowest price possible. People oftentimes buy more, or don't, you know, don't look at the price just because that they have a taste-oriented decision of one single.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this conversation. Something else that I'm thinking about is like how fast AI is changing. Like if we have this conversation again in 3 months or 6 months, what new things are you going to tell me about what you found? That would be like really interesting. Thank you so much for joining me, taking time out of your busy schedules. And I really appreciate your feedback and comments.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.